Oi, lads, did you miss out on the Jaren's Outpost Kickstarter and wish you weren't such a big doofus? Well, fear not. Late pledges are now open and they'll be open for a little while. So just head to Kickstarter, search for D&Ds for Nerds or Jaren's Outpost and slam that late pledge button.
Although you see no water for miles around, you are, like us, marooned. You're stranded in this sad and lonely place called Barovia. To mix metaphors, we are incarcerated. The fog that surrounds us are the bars of our dungeon, and Baron von Strahd is our jailer. As far as I can tell, there is only one way out, and that is to kill Devil Strahd.
Okay, well, we've got to keep moving. Thank the rats, and we'll get out of here.
The rat returns to its food.
Okay, great. Slam! Out into the freezing cold street again, and then if we've got to hit another house before the church, great, or right into the church, whatever we're closest to.
You make your way house to house mm-hmm. to the church. Hector.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
You are in Castle Ravenloft so quickly your head spins.
I'm looking around.
Fair.
You're in the courtyard to Castle Ravenloft. So I assume you maybe have a basic understanding of what a castle looks like.
I do.
Walls with the actual keep in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You are inside the walls, but not inside the castle itself.
Okay.
As soon as Strahd enveloped you, you felt a sudden sense of movement and maybe time passing. You're not sure. Looking up, it's hard to tell due to the sun being obscured by clouds. It's hard to tell if time passed or not. It feels like maybe time has passed, but also you can't tell that it has.
Okay. I make sure. Is Gretchen okay?
Gretchen staggers a little bit. She seems like it seems like the same thing happened to her. She seems very unsteady on her feet.
You okay?
Gretchen looks at you and then looks at Strahd, and you can see it's like a deer in the headlights. Mm. She's just frozen.
I want to make an expression of just like, almost like a shrug of like
what are you gonna do? Yeah.
Nick, we have to pick up that kind of thing. Just a bit like,
well, she's not.
Yeah.
No fight.
Oh, I know. It's just very much of like, what was the expression? You're kind of like,
what are you gonna do? Like, you gotta just, this is where we are.
I try to just reassure her.
You hear
in a weird way.
You hear metal upon metal clanking behind you, and you whip around to see that the courtyard was not uninhabited. There are many people here. There's a small, you could call it an army. Mm. There's certainly, Castle Ravenloft is inhabited, which is perhaps the first time you've discovered that.
Mm.
There are people here. The battlements are manned. There are soldiers around.
They like undead or?
No, they're people. The sound that you heard was a man approaching you. He removes his helm and you see a Barovian. My lord, you have returned. Forgive me, he looks at you and Gretchen. Shall we make two rooms? Strahd nods, and you can see Strahd, he slowly stands up, and in that time that it took for him to stand up, because he was down on one knee, in the time that he stands up, it's like it never happened, but for one brief moment, Hector, he looked old and tired, but when he's fully standing, he's back as when you first saw him. Impossibly powerful in appearance.
I really want to ask for a cloak because I'm once again realizing my
your
my
nudity.
Penis is out.
Yeah.
But I also don't want to interrupt.
Nuts out in Castle Ravenloft.
Actually, I had forgotten that as well. Yeah. Strahd, in that moment as well, he seems to remember as well. He snaps his fingers and gestures, a cloak is brought for you. One of the guards, there are a few of them now approaching you. Another guard takes their cloak off and wraps it around you. You are immediately warm.
Thank you.
The guard nods, but says nothing.
I look around at this. Is it like, is Strahd amassing an army as well? Like, almost like a counter?
You know a little bit about matters of war. You would say that this is not unusual for a castle of this size. This looks like just a regular complement of bodies.
Okay. And I kind of like, yeah, she is amassing an army.
Strahd puts up a hand.
Is have you spoken to Rahad?
Rahadin has spoken to me. Yes, she marches upon Barovia, and if I do nothing, she will sweep over these lands. But I am not idle. You are tired.
Yes. Is Elf the refugee, the escapee from the Rahadin was? Is she okay?
Elf will dine with us tonight.
Oh,
Hector.
Yes.
Strahd reaches out a hand. Please, you should rest.
Yes. I have been.
Gretchen, is it? Strahd turns to Gretchen. Please, I would be honored if you joined us. Gretchen nods as if there was nothing else to do.
I nod as if there's nothing else to do.
Yeah.
I have information. I can say what I saw.
Rahadin has furnished me with all the detail I need. Hector, I understand the weight of the worlds. It is a burden. But until tomorrow, it will wait.
I suppose you are right.
Strahd takes you into the castle. Some of the guards you see fall into line behind you as a rear action.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look hostile or anything like that. They're at ease. This doesn't look like the sort of thing where they're making sure you don't try to escape. They're just walking with you. You think these might just be Strahd's like personal guard who follow him everywhere, potentially.
Right.
As soon as you enter, the first room of Castle Ravenloft is a huge, grand hallway, gorgeous, with gargoyles beautifully and immaculately carved above you, running near the ceiling of this room. You, maybe because of your previous experience with gargoyles, you feel a shudder running down your spine. But these ones, if they are alive, they show no evidence of it. There is ahead of you a set of grand stairs which lead upwards, a less set of grand stairs off to the side which lead down, and then many doors on either side of you. Also in the entryway, you are greeted by Rahadin and a staff. There are people, Barovians dressed smartly, neatly enough, who, as you step in, they begin adding to your cloak.
Oh,
there's
nice.
a attendant offers you a pair of socks and boots. Another one gives you like a loincloth, maybe some pants, a shirt. You can see they treat Gretchen in a similar manner. She already has some clothes, but they give her like a nice heavy cloak, a coat maybe. They give her nicer boots as well. Someone offers you a drink as well.
I think back to last time someone offered me a drink. No, thank you. No, it's okay. It is okay. Thank you.
Strahd turns. Hector, please.
Okay.
Drink.
As if I was mesmerized, but I guess I'm not. But I will grab a drink. I'm sorry. I'm trying to also like now fall back to memories of being in court and fall back into like
what's the appropriate thing to do amongst nobility,
to be like there's little tiny bits here and there with nobility. It was mostly dealing with on the outskirts, mostly dealing with the religious side of the being a knight. But it's also like you had to attend these
of
things,
course.
You had to see, you had to approach the king in a certain way, all the different like minor houses, and you're like, well, this one I'm guessing is
a major.
The king. So it's like, well, when the king says to do a thing, you do a thing.
You probably ought to.
The attendants, as they approach you and, offer you clothes and drink, they peel away as soon as you've accepted it. You can see as they step away, some of them every now and then, a few of them maybe also offered Strahd some things as well. Like someone got him a drink as well. You can see Strahd changes from outdoor boots to indoor slippers.
Awesome.
Okay.
As they do that, they they seem very reverent of Strahd, and anyone who attends to Strahd directly, he from a small purse at his side, he produces a coin to tip people as they attend him.
I'm just taking all this in, observing as much as I can, and also just noting how strangely familiar this all is.
Mm.
Like, just in terms of, like, this is just, and not even, like, even familiar, but, like, kings in Candor didn't tip.
Yeah.
There's definitely, no, like, nobles didn't, some nobles didn't.
Yeah.
Some kings just, and like, you know, then like, I guess the king that I would be familiar with, I'm like, he never.
No. God, no.
He never tipped.
Rahadin turns to Strahd. My lord, rooms have been prepared. Good, Rahadin, good. Strahd puts a hand on Rahadin's shoulder, grasps him firmly, gives him a little, like, a friendly sort of shake. Thank you. I apologize profoundly for the trauma inflicted upon you. And then he gestures to you, Hector and Gretchen, and, of course, upon you as well. Had I known what Ivana was planning, I would not have allowed you. Not have allowed you to travel north.
No, it is partly my own Thank you.
Strahd and Rahadin lead you up those stairs and into the bowels of Castle Ravenloft. You can see that this place is immaculately kept. It's beautiful inside, and it feels warm. Huh. Every now and then, you can see that there is not just torch braziers to keep light. There's little, like, fireplaces every now and then sporadically placed throughout Castle Ravenloft, which channel heat throughout the corridors.
Do I think that's strange, like, knowing about vampires that...
this is not for Strahd's comfort.
Yeah. Like, vampires, you know, they don't really...
They're not feeling the weather.
Yeah. So I'm just like, that. I'm like, oh, that's so nice. It's all warm. Why? Wait, what is... Also, the food and the drink, does that taste slightly different to me?
Yeah. Is it your... Well,
I do have my tongue. You're right.
But your bottom jaw is good.
No, I kept my tongue, though, so it tastes all right. Okay. I was having a bit of think.
Yeah. Did you keep your stomach? Or you'll be pissing it out through a different penis.
Yeah, man,
that's pretty crazy to think about.
Crazy.
You enter into a part of Castle Ravenloft, which is quite clearly meant for guests.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that there is room after room after room. Not like a hotel, not like that many rooms, but there is enough space here for a sizable amount, possibly like a visiting dignitary and their staff to stay, that much space. Just before that area, though, there is a huge set of oak double doors. Beautiful, gorgeous wood with a sigil of a sun carved into them. These doors, as beautiful as they are, you can tell from a glance they have not been opened recently. There is a chain through the handle of those doors, and it is locked tight. As you walk past them, Strahd reaches out. You can see Strahd, it's not like a conscious thing that he's doing. Almost like a for good luck, he does this. He reaches out with a hand and gently brushes it, drags it along the door as you walk. You can see where his fingers find touch purchase on the wood. It's, you know... You see, like, a statue, and it's been bronzed in a part where people always touch it.
Yep.
You can see the exact same thing on these doors. He must have done this a countless number of times.
Okay. I want to. I ask. It's like, I want to ask. It's not my place to ask.
Yeah.
I look at the sun. Is it a religious symbol?
It looks religious. Like, yeah, it's quite clearly iconography.
Okay. The sun god?
Strahd takes a deep breath in. That can wait. You see, he seems dumbfounded for a moment, like he doesn't know what to say. Please. All in time.
Yes, of course. As we're walking, I just linger at that symbol.
You are both brought to rooms next to each other. The doors are opened for you, and you're let into a nice room. It looks, once again, like everything else in Castle Ravenloft. It looks well kept for. It's a four-poster double bed, comfortable seating. There's like a small space of like a writing desk if you want to use that. It's got its own like attached bathroom sort of area. Not very big or anything like that, but certainly the nicest place you've stayed. Maybe even before Barovia as well. It's pleasant here. There is no fireplace here, but there is a metal grate set against the floor, which heat slowly wafts out of. Presumably, this somehow connects to one of the many fireplaces.
Huh. I guess I just, take it all in and just, just take that all in, because it is not at all what I had imagined.
Yeah.
Castle Ray, the stories that I was hearing, I imagine this was a very dark, like, decrepit, falling down, spiders in, like, but you know, D&D, large
spiders. Yeah, gigantic spiders.
In, like, every corner. Manned by nothing but ghouls and skeletons.
Yeah.
You're like, what the heck? This is not okay.
Strahd, standing at the doorway, I must leave you. I have business to attend to. Nothing of interest. Accounting. But in the meantime, rest. Someone will be by with clothes for you.
It would be very appreciative. Thank you very much.
Oh, and for tonight, Hector. Forgive me, but I must know. He leans in. He takes a... he's been
My neck tenses.
His entire time he'd been standing at the doorway to your room. He leans in a little bit, just so... Not that he's in the room, but that his head passes the threshold. And some lizard part of the back of your brain is like, he entered my room.
Yeah.
He's of course. It's he doesn't need permission. These are his rooms.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Yep. All right.
That flares up in your brain. But as he leans in, just passes his head through the threshold, for tonight, do you have any allergies?
No allergies. No. No. No, nothing I'm allergic to.
Excellent. I believe roast pork.
That.
Vegetables. Strahd reaches in, grabs the handle to the door, and closes it as he leaves.
That would be delightful.
It's too nice. I don't like it.
Something's
up, dude. Mm.
Okay. Is Gretchen in her own room as well?
Gretchen's in the room next door. There's like an adjoining door which can be locked from either side or from both sides.
Okay.
You hear it unlock from Gretchen's side.
Oh, okay. Well, almost like shaking my head out of any kind of thought or trance, I go and I unlocked the door between the two rooms and
Gretchen opens it. Do we escape?
I don't think so. How are you? Come in. Is there like a chairs we could just sit down on?
Yeah.
So I was 3 months I was out?
Yes, Gretchen says. It's been months.
Right. And apart from, of course, the obvious, tell me, what did they do to you? Did they just...
They held me. She shudders. I think I was like... spare parts waiting to be used.
I kind of look at my own body.
Fucked up. You could have woken up with Gretchen's bits in you.
Yeah, man.
Oof. Woof.
I don't think we escape if we tried. I mean, I think that there's going to be a war tomorrow.
Gretchen, looking at you, says, I hope so. The alternative is that army sweeps into Barovia, and I can think of, I mean, what worse could happen?
People
taken and harvested like that?
Yeah.
I was not the only person there. Where I was kept, the people they would capture, they would take. I spoke with some other people. They've been to realms. They would come, take people, and then take them apart.
Yeah, when I was, I woke up once, and I had been taken apart. I don't really know the full extent of it. I had no jaw. I had no arms. Imposing myself.
No, I thought that Strahd was a being of pure evil. When I first arrived this land, the people of this land, they talk to him, they talk about him like he is this all-powerful, all-consuming monster. But did you see what he tips the staff? He has staff.
I got him, Jack. I got him.
Pip, tearing at the church. Don't know what that was.
Pip just starts puking uncontrollably.
Something bad's happening.
They got him. They got him. They got him.
It's like I sit down, like maybe on the either there's a chair, on the chair, or the, maybe we were sitting already down. I can slump further down, and I start maybe just sort of because Gretchen has not been around Barovia for very long, so it's this kind
it's very funny. She spent more time in
Borcher,
than you spent in Barovia, which is funny.
So I start like maybe just sort of like going through everything that we've sort of done and like all the sort of like either the monstrosities or the people we've come up against. That it's just sort of like as I'm listening, like we met the angel in the abbey. He was, you know, doing experiments in a very similar way to Ivana. Hopefully, or maybe actually, like, hopefully you'll meet and you, doesn't matter. But he was experimenting on people, and he was, he made a similar construct, like a bride of Strahd, because he thought it would appease Strahd, but he was never asked to. And then, and the people in the abbey, the people that were maimed, transformed, or deformed in any way, I mean, they were shunned by the townsfolk. And then in Valakai, it was the Burgomaster trying to summon great evil. In Kutcheri, it was the bride of Strahd, but it wasn't Strahd himself. I understand, like, and just like looking around, like, but everywhere we go, he is a great evil. No, he murdered, committed genocide. He slaughtered the Dusk Elves before my time. I kind of start talking, you know, I start talking to Gretchen, and I start explaining to Gretchen some of the stories that I have told about the prior uprising of what happened, and that like, even retelling the story of the Kenku that Pip told Hector about trumpets. And then it's just like, so he was turned, and then as a way of retribution, the Dusk Elves that fought up against him or rose up against him, he slaughtered all the women and children. I had a friend, she'd been to the town of Barovia and said it was, like, almost it was salted, or all the inhabitants worse than anywhere she'd been. And where they farm, he salted the fields. So we've been told, I think. But I look around, I'm like, I don't know, there's something strange happening. I don't know what.
Gretchen tells you in turn of her time, and she tells you not of many horrors, but of one constant horror. She tells you of the stories that she heard from Ivana's enemies, of towns within Borcha being drained of people to fuel her army. Hundreds and thousands of people torn apart piece by piece and put back together. She tells you of pieces of people being restitched and restitched and restitched, and the horrifying discovery weeks in that pieces of people can remember themselves. And as she says that, she looks at you briefly, and both of you wonder that if the pieces of you that are not you are aware of what is happening to them. And she tells you of Ivana's allies, who she spoke with, her jailers, who would tell... Her allies would tell tales of how manipulations magical and sometimes mundane that Ivana uses to control and keep people. That the lands of Borcha, people can freely enter and leave because no one ever leaves.
Oh.
Ivana chains people to Borcha in ways that Strahd simply cannot.
There's a device. I explain what that, you know, I describe it very, like the sphere. That is, it was in so many of them, us. You remove it.
Gretchen nods. It puts a poison in you. Ivana loves her poisons.
I think I know where my arm will be.
Well, that's a start.
It doesn't matter. Did you find out maybe any reasoning why she wants to invade Barovia?
The rumor is she wants the Dark Lands for herself, not part, all.
The Dark, as in every realm.
Yes, she has designs. Each of the realms is controlled or owned by a Dark Lord. Barovia is a creature called Vampyr. Borcha.
Right, Vampyr, yes. It is above Kuchiri, there's this Amber Temple. It was housing many evils, one of them being Vampyr. The other one is what the Virgin Master worshipped. Don't really want to say his name out. You might have heard these stories of a very powerful being that would freeze the world.
Gretchen puts up a hand, nods, and then she doesn't actually write the words, but she, with her finger, puts it on the table and traces Father Lemek.
I nod, and he was trapped in the Amber Temple, but I think he's free in the town of Valakai.
Ivana has designs and desires beyond the Dark Realms, though, and there is rumor among her allies, though she keeps her objectives to herself. But there is rumor that an entity within the Amber Temple can maybe grant her access to the realms beyond, to the material, to other places.
I think back to the Amber Temple. I mean, we didn't explore it to the fullest extent and degree, but we did come across some like ancient gods and.
Oh yeah, there was heaps of guys.
And I try to like think of any of those. Maybe there's the ones that she wants to try to free, or anything like that to try to, you know, cast.
You're not sure
back.
What you don't really know much about the dark powers themselves. But it is not outside. That seems a plausible thing.
Yeah.
Ivana's main opponent in this is Strahd. Many of the other Dark Lords would like to see the back of her.
Mm.
Strahd is apparently the only one who resists.
Okay. How many do you know? Did you find out how many?
I didn't learn much outside of Borcha itself.
Who does she ally herself with? Citizens of the.
She has no allies. She has pets, pawns.
Yes. There is a one of her servants, the thing that attacked human and elf.
Mm.
Spoke to him a few times.
Yes. One of her lieutenants. It is not a willing ally.
No. He wants to get out. I think if we somehow find a way to free him, that would serve us well.
Gretchen laughs darkly. We'll put it on the pile.
And I met my friend Pip. I met his sister. She was there. The kobold.
Okay.
Cool.
The kobold's his sister. You realize Gretchen must have encountered.
Yeah.
You encountered? Okay. You encountered
Are
her?
They similar, would you say?
It's a complicated question.
In some regards, they were...
Specifically, what regards? And how close a friend are you to Pip?
Good question as well.
Great question. Look, Pip has his foibles, but I would consider him, honestly, one of my closest friends.
There's a knock at the door.
They just grew up in the same religious orphanage. Come in.
As the person, you hear Gretchen ask, but she is interrupted. Yeah. You hear Gretchen ask, so they were raised by the same person? And then the door opens and two attendants walk in. I was about to say as if they knew that you were both in this room, but no, actually, there's a knock at Gretchen's door as well, and some people walk in for her. Mm-hmm. You can see two people walk in. A tailor? Well, no, actually, I guess they'd both be tailors. Two people walk in, and one begins taking measurements, and the other one begins fitting clothes to you.
I have a little minor freak out. little bit of a post-traumatic...
The last time someone was taking your measurements.
If they notice that, one of them says, we can come back later.
No, it is okay. It is the last time someone did this, I ended up not myself.
Forgive me.
No, it is...
We can get something perhaps baggy, maybe, that would still
no,
be
no,
warm.
No. It is okay. I stand, to my fullest height.
Mm-hmm. A little bit taller now.
Yeah, a little bit taller than that is. Used to be.
Have I reached... I think because Hector was originally 6'2", round about there.
Maybe are we more like 6'5" now?
Okay, I was going to say, are we still within relatively human size, or are we like sitting that 7-foot monstrosity?
6'5".
Okay. Okay, tall though. God damn.
Oh man, yeah. Opening doors is just like one of those things where you
duck.
I guess full of like muscle memory, but not anymore because that muscle memory somewhere else.
Every time. God
damn. I think like. Must be very strange. I stand up to my fullest height. Mm-hmm. And okay. Is this what is this for again? Sorry.
Clothes,
of course.
Would you like, we can monogram the clothes if you wish, or if you have a sigil, something you would like us, anything you would like us to stitch within?
A strawberry.
They nod. The person doing the actual tailoring maybe asks you a few further questions, like, the shape, the size, positioning, that sort of stuff.
I kind of almost like, I don't know, use your best judgment.
They, as where you might put a monogram, they instead put a little strawberry.
I hope people would find that amusing.
They make you a nice pair of pants, shirt, a coat, maybe a big over jacket as well for when it gets extra cold. You don't need that now, but you might need it later. Maybe even like a hat, a fur-lined hat, and of course socks and boots.
I thank them. And I. Is it the implication is like this is to wear now, or is it to like wear to dinner?
Yeah.
They actually, you know what? Great question. In addition to that set of clothing, they make several. You've got like several sets of clothes now. Mm-hmm. You've got like maybe three shirts, a couple jackets, some pants, some underclothes as well. They ask, well, first off, you can see that they're just assuming to make a nice set of clothes, like something that a noble might wear. They're making that. But then they ask, one of the attendants asks, we can make something more travel hardy. We could make just simple clothes.
Travel hardy would be nice.
They make you a set of traveling clothes, something designed to be worn on the road, maybe a bit extra warm. Maybe that's where that overcoat comes in, honestly.
Yeah.
So you've got, a set of like nice clothes, nice robes, a set of travel clothes. Is there anything else that you want?
I don't think it would occur to Hector to ask for anything else apart from just like, it gets cold and the wearing furs and all that kind of stuff, or even trying to find like good clothing that kept us warm was hard.
Absolutely.
To do. So traveling
just practical
clothes,
considerations, practical. Really. Yeah.
Well, maybe then they make you two options for practical clothes and then one set of nice clothes.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
You can see through the Gretchen leaves the door open and you can see as she's undergoing a similar thing. She explains how to do Gulliver's Eye for her pattern.
Right, thank you.
When the clothes have been finished, there's another knock at the door.
Yes, come in.
The attendants leave as this happens. Rahadin steps in. He looks at you, then looks through the open doorway at Gretchen. When you are ready, please make your way down for supper.
Thank you. We'll be there momentarily.
He nods. The master likes to keep things punctual. Please, in the next 10 to 15.
Are we fully dressed?
You dressed well, yeah.
I look over to Gretchen if she's all...
She's ready as well.
We'll be right down.
Rahadin nods. He, before he leaves, he maybe just gives you like a vague idea of where to go as well.
Yep.
It's not hard. And as he's leaving, he says, if you have trouble, just waylay one of the staff.
Of course. Thank you.
Rahadin gives you a snappy little clicks his boots together and then leaves.
Mm. All right. I do up my tie, but
yeah.
What kind of formal clothes?
What's the nice, I guess, a noble's outfit? Do you have puffy sleeves?
Yeah.
You can describe it yourself if you want. They make it to your specifications.
Oh, man. I don't know what would have been the fashion of Candor at the time for the nobility?
Oh, would you even know, honestly?
I rolled a 20 on hats before. I would know this.
Okay, well, you know what the hats are supposed to look like.
I know fashion.
You know, Hector knows fashion.
Yeah, Hector knows enough fashion about the royals.
He's
that he'd
a passion
be like,
for fashion, dude. Mm-hmm.
You know that the current in craze is ruffles, and they are slowly getting bigger.
Awesome. Big ruffly sleeves.
Oh, I meant neck.
Jacobian ruffle. Yeah. Yes, beautiful. Please. That's awesome.
I would have probably described it at the time where I would be like, not what the, the higher echelon of the nobility.
Yeah, the cutting edge, yeah.
Not the
well,
cutting
you're not
edge.
You're allowed to have a ruffle bigger than the king.
Yeah, well, of course, yeah, so that exactly. would be, you know,
can't
treason.
Yeah.
But I do describe, the fashion of the time where I was from, which would be probably more of a what I would expect at a state dinner.
Yeah.
For the nobility to wear. Would Knights of the Cloth and the religious factions also be partaking in that similar sort of
No, Knights of the Cloth do not dress up.
Mm-hmm. Not Knights of the Cloth, but is there a term for the stewards or the people in the people who are looking after the church, but they're more dealing with politicking and those kind of things?
Oh,
they're the
maybe,
ones going
yeah.
and rubbing yeah. shoulders, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
That fashion?
Well, they probably just do fashion of the crowns of fashion that is popular with the crown and with the nobility. It would be, ruffles. Big ruffles around the neck. It would be long, wizard sleeves, but then kind of tapered to a very tight tautness around the upper arm. Is this your upper arm?
Yeah, forearm.
Upper forearm, yes, thank you. A small hoop skirt just coming kind of down, just around basically the crotch area if you want to dress masculine, and full hoop skirt if you'd like to dress feminine.
Nice. Okay. With a big bustle on the back?
Yeah, big bustle.
Love a bustle, dude.
All right, I'll go with more masculine, garb. All right, well, I guess I adjust my ruffles and my wizard sleeves.
Does he look sort of
stupid? Yeah.
Well, yeah, but to Gretchen, does he look extra absurd because she's hundreds and hundreds of years in the past?
You could see Gretchen's fancy outfit is a huge fur coat that drapes along the floor, kind of, the sort of wedding dress that three people need to pick up?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that big. And it's got a huge fur hoodie, which has this large, huge point to it with a big tassel at the top, which sticks up very stiff and starched.
Uh-huh.
And then underneath that, she's wearing very colorless browns and blacks, vest.
Oh, yeah.
A simple vest on top of a black shirt, black pants, which she has tucked in.
As I look over, I start
and slippers.
I start laughing. And I just am like, it is nice to know that the fashion of any time is truly absurd. Do you have the...
Don't know what you're talking about, she says.
I'm like... Of course you do not. I guess you do not have the Roycon Gurge during your time, do you?
She shakes her head.
Says, you have a king, yes?
Who has a king?
The Kandor.
Who?
The nation of Kandor.
Who?
You don't have a king's rod yet, do you? Of course not.
Her order was established before the king. Specifically because there was none.
Right, yes. In my time, there is an elite, military faction that is run allegiance to the king
of Can of where
it is.
Where's that?
It is like a nation. We would have had nation states. I try to remember my history. Is there anything I can like relate back to?
Like what was in Kandor before?
Not even what was in Kandor. Just like. Understand that, like, you know, nations are formed and changed and borderlines and
so
that kind of stuff.
It'd
be like, you know, like
it would have been something,
like a lordship or whatever that might have been. Anyway,
well, the gnomes in Zamjada, well, they don't have a king; they have a president. But for you, for Hector, your understanding of politics, well, of gnomish politics, is such that a king and a president are basically the same thing to you. You might describe the gnomes.
You have the gnomish nation to the north,
Zamjada.
They have a president or something like that, or a king.
Yeah.
So it's something like that. It is like
the
nation.
King of Appleville.
Really, there's a king of Appleville.
Yeah.
Huh.
You realize she might be so far away that Kandor hadn't been formed yet.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm gathering that. It's just like, wow. I didn't know each little tiny. Village had its own like king. Like a king of. So imagine if the lands keep expanding. Kings. Is there a closer king to Apple? Another
king of Blue Beach.
Right. Yes. Okay. You may have like looking at the geography. Mm. So like imagine if most of these southern towns from. Let's say Apple would be all the way down to Blue Beach was under one nation.
Mm.
That's like is Kandor.
Kandor's big, she says.
Yes, it is one of the biggest nations out there. The Kingsguard, I guess. In my future, it is they dress in a certain way, but another companion of ours, John Cavendish, is from. And further into the future than I. And let me tell you about his silly little hat.
Pip.
Yes.
You can see the Church of St. Andrew ahead of you. You just need to get across the street.
Okay.
You look to the left.
Mm.
You look to the right.
Mm.
You look back to the left because the banshee is there.
Fuck. Okay.
Cool. What is she immune to? Yeah, good. Okay, well, cold, the potion of cold I made previously is of no use to me here.
Yep.
Resistance to acid, fire, lightning, and psychic. Okay.
Mm.
Okay. Doesn't leave us much.
Acid, fire, lightning, psychic. Okay. Immune, you say?
Immune? No, resistant.
Ah.
Immune to cold, necrotic, and poison.
Ah.
Resistant to acid, fire, lightning, and psychic.
Okay. And your crossbow, you can at least change that to something it's not immune to, which is nice.
Well, that's some small blessings. Mm. Yes. Because what are my options again with the crossbow? Fire... cold, acid, and lightning. Okay.
Pip,
as
you do that double take, you look back, you can see it's like the Banshee doesn't properly... you think maybe the Banshee hasn't spotted you yet.
Okay.
It looks like it's Lady Watcher.
Yeah.
You can see. It's a ghostly, pale visage of Lady Watcher. She takes a few steps back. She has both of her hands pressed up against her chest.
Yeah.
You can see that there is a dagger protruding from where she is grasping at.
We're all good.
Stop! Stop! Then, because like I said, at first you think she hasn't spotted you.
Yeah.
She wheels around on you, and you can see that is her spotting you. Assassin! She points at you. You think that this Banshee means to kill you.
Okay.
It's your turn.
Okay. The dagger in her heart.
It's not in her heart, it's in her chest.
Okay, so someone's put it in the wrong place. Bullshit. Okay.
I would like to fire two. What are they called?
Oh, I'm so sorry. Do you think this is an actual dagger in the Banshee?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a dagger. Okay.
This is her reliving a moment from her life, right. Presumably her loss.
Yeah, mm, yeah, yeah. Yep. It's not a golden dagger.
It's a ghostly dagger. Ghostly, you can't even tell. Yeah.
Well, either way, I'm going to fire two pinning shots at her. I'm going to crank it to fire because that's the only way she doesn't have immunity to.
If you were a pyromaniac.
That's a very funny joke.
Thank you.
That's a very good joke, too. It's very funny. It's very funny. Very well done. Uh-huh. Congratulations, Adam.
Okay. I was like, I wonder if it's like a, how could you tell? Like, is this like the dagger form from Cold Iron? Was this the one that was used to summon Father Limit? Is this what all? I was like, or kitchen knife.
Yeah.
Where the staff was like, hey,
we can just kill Lady Watcher.
Opportunist here.
You fire two pinning shots.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, she is immune to that.
Oh, immune to being pinned.
Yeah, she's a ghost.
Yeah. Yeah,
But the shots do. Shots hit.
They'll still do some meager damage to her.
I forget if it's D6s or. Yeah, I think it's D6s. So fire damage, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
And you're shooting a heavy crossbow. So, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's not nothing.
Okay.
6, 9, 17. Plus only half of this.
Yeah.
17 plus 6 is 23. 23 points of damage.
Hey, not bad. Not bad.
That's pretty good,
I would
say.
Then I'm going to let the crossbow drop and stick my fingers in my ears. And then turn around to everyone else. I encourage you to do the same.
They don't do it in 5th edition, but in 3.5 and 4th ed, bards used to have, counter spell. So bards used to have a power called counter song, and if it's something like a banshee's wail, they could counter that in the same way that you'd counter a spell. They don't do it anymore, but it is
such a shame.
It's kind of sick. I think it's cool. Muriel looks at you and says, are we fighting now? Is this the plan?
I was trying to slow it down. Keep moving. Get in the church.
Oh, we're slowing it down. She points a finger at the banshee and you hear and you see Muriel close her eyes, concentrate very hard, and then an explosion of feathers leaps out of her finger and a raven slams into the banshee. The raven explodes into more feathers when it slams into the banshee, and she deals 32 points of damage.
Whoa, that's pretty good.
The banshee is blasted back 30 feet, then Muriel starts sprinting with her fingers in her ears towards the church.
Cool.
It's Iona's turn. Iona puts her hand on your back.
Mm-hmm.
And she whispers into your ear, run fast. You feel a surge, like you've been electrified.
Okay.
You're aware that if you started moving your legs, they would move at quite the rate.
Okay.
You see the same spell is affecting her.
Yeah.
And she sprints past you. She gets to the door this turn.
Well, I'll do the same then.
It's the Banshee's turn.
Okay.
The banshee has not seen its reflection.
Yeah.
So
really how to do that.
It regenerates 20 hit points.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think it. We're not killing it, okay? We're just getting in the church so we can.
It's very defensive the way you said that. We're not killing it, Adam.
Okay? We're just
trying Adam.
To survive, all right? Christ's sake.
And then assassins! The banshee releases a mournful wail. Provided that she isn't in sunlight, this wail has no effect on constructs and undead. You a construct? I forget.
No, I'm a man.
Yeah. All other creatures within 120 feet of her make a con saving throw.
Yeah, my fingers in my ears doesn't stutter.
It gives you an advantage.
Okay, hey, I'll take it, dude. I'll bloody take it.
You pass?
Yes.
And you know what? The other two have their fingers in their ears as well.
Well, I told them to. Yeah, I'm covering my lizard ear holes.
So you sprint to the church?
Yeah.
What happens with your crossbow?
It's slung around my shoulder. It's on a strap.
It's on a strap?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that.
That's like the first thing Durak taught me, dude.
Strap, strap, strap,
strap, strap, strap, strap.
Use a strap or you'll get the strap. Iona is also fine, but you see Muriel clutches at her heart.
Okay. Can I? I guess I've already run to the church.
No, she dies. No.
Imagine. Oh, damn.
No. On a failed save, they are cursed, disadvantaged on saving throws, attack rolls, and skill checks.
God damn it.
Additionally, they will die within 24 hours unless they are able to reduce the Banshee to zero hit points first. If a character dies in this way, the curse transfers to the next of kin, allowing them another saving throw, and will continue to transfer in this way until it ends the original target's lineage. On a successful save, a creature takes... Oh, that's right.
Okay.
Oh, thank God I read to the end.
Okay, very interesting. So Muriel has to be the one to reduce it to zero. Cool. That's fine. Not a problem.
You and Iona take...
What?
What the heck?
What the hell?
10, 20.
10?
Oh my God. 32, 39. 39, 48.
Sure. Sure, dude. Bit of fun.
Okay. So, Pip.
What's up, dude?
Hang on, let me quickly, before I gloat, I'm going to apply the 48. No. All right, so Iona is reduced to zero hit points.
Okay.
So Iona collapses.
Fuck.
Pip, you had a maximum hit points of 39.
Uh-oh, dude.
Now, Pip.
Uh-oh.
You take 48 points of damage.
Oh, fuck, dude.
You had... Now, I would like to remind you, if I deal after your current hit points, if I still have 39 points of damage, you die. And the damage was 48.
But this is my... Didn't I rest? Didn't I rest to fix this?
You had 10 hit points.
Okay. Fuck me, dude.
So, you were one point.
Jesus Christ.
You were 1 point.
Jesus Christ.
You and Iona both collapse.
Fuck. Okay. A really bad opening salvo.
You're so lucky though, Pip. As you're collapsing, not only did you miss dying by one hit point, as you hit the ground, you did this right before the chapel. You can see the last thing that you see as Iona was about to reach for the doors, the doors begin opening from inside.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure, startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach, integrier und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.